My name is Julia Kleppen. I am 67. Today's date is June 26th, 2007. And I'm interviewing my domestic partner at Milwaukee Public Library. And her name is...
Holly Standish Loveland, age 59. Today's date, same thing, 6/26/07 at Milwaukee Public Library. And I'm talking with my partner.
So, Holly, you had a happy family life, and do you want to tell us about that?
Sure. She said woodenly. I had a great life. My dad was a career military officer, and I spent some of my youth in Germany and had some good experiences. We had a nice, close family. And so I feel that set me up pretty well for things that happened later on in my life and also for relationships in my life. And I have one older sister, 3 years older, who was a sort of a product of the 50s, and I was sort of a product of the 60s. And
she was taken over by the Martians.
Yeah, it's taken us about 40 years to get to the point where
she's
we're
a Republican.
Sort of. So, oh, well, so was my father. But,
he was a nice Republican.
He was a nice Republican.
Used to be nice Republicans.
So I come from a military family, and my sister and her family are all Army people, and I think there's a Navy one stuck in there somewhere. Black sheep, you know.
Yeah.
I ended up back in Detroit, and then moved to Milwaukee in 1986. While in Detroit, I think we're supposed to talk a little bit about the gay community here. And while in Detroit, I came out around 77, went to the first big gay march in Washington in 79. Very, very powerful experience. We said that there were 50,000 of us. They said there were 25,000 of us. But just the fact that there were more than 5,000 of us sort of shocked everybody, us included. When I came out, I thought there might be a couple of us on the West Coast and a couple in New York and the rest in prison somewhere. But I was going to find out that there were all kinds of networks and organizations and ways of getting in touch with people.
And when you found out you were gay, you were a lesbian, you told me the story about the friend who'd given you a book.
Oh, yeah. It's always a decision who to tell and how to tell them. And I had an old, very good friend. We had been sorority sisters and had been through a lot together. And I finally called her up and I said, "Naomi, I'm a lesbian." And she says, "God, it took you so long to figure it out." She said, "I gave you a book, The Height Report. Didn't you get to that chapter?" my mother died before I came out and was one of the causes of my introspection. So I never had the awkward part of whether you tell your family. Back in the 70s, people were still, some of them, shunned by their families. I wasn't, and I wouldn't have been. I think they would have adjusted eventually. When I told my sister, she said, "So what?" And so everything was fine with me. I didn't run into one of those real crisis situations. When I came to Milwaukee, I was sort of recruited to work in city government. And
sort of. They kind of went after you.
Well, it was hard to find women in my field, which was computer systems at the time. And they were an affirmative action city government here. It was pretty progressive. And so they did come after me. And
that was Mayor Meyer, right?
Yeah, Mayor Meyer's administration. And his, I don't really know how active he was, but I know that his wife, used to have fundraisers for various gay organizations, including the Cream City Foundation, at their house. Mm-hmm. So he was pretty supportive, but I wasn't really out to him or to anybody. I came in as a systems person. And when John Norquist was elected, I wasn't sure about him. I never denied who I was. I just didn't really come out very, but...
you didn't go broadcasting it all over the place, strangely enough.
But Norquist had people in his office that he designated as coordinators for various groups, like, say, the Hispanic community or the African-American community. And he did name somebody in his office to be a liaison with the gay community. And I was asked to be, through Human Rights League, I was on the board there, and they asked me to be the MC at the reception.
And for the mayor.
For the mayor and the new liaison. And the article that came out in the paper the next day made it look like, if you just read the front page, like I was the liaison. So normally if you were named in the paper or something, people would come up in your department the next day and say, congratulations, you know, and the mayor has named you and so on. Well, I came in the next morning and somebody had run a copy of the article off and put it on the chairs of every employee in my department. And most people were just went on about their business. Nobody said anything about it. One fellow came up and said, hey, Holly, I hear you were named the liaison. And I said, well, you heard wrong, but thanks. One or two people had a hard time meeting my eye, you know, but...
After six months or so.
Yeah, it eventually loosened up and people realized it was a non-issue. I didn't know if it would be an issue with the mayor, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. You know, he really didn't care about your personal life. He didn't care about me personally. So as long as I did my job, that was what mattered to him. And he had a... Not too long after that, he had a gay chief of staff, and he also refused to attend a council of mayors conference because it was held in a state that had recently passed an anti-gay law or something. I thought he was pretty supportive. One year, he vetoed the gay pride funding out of the community block grant funds or some funding source from the city and said that he didn't think that was appropriate, that type of activity was appropriate. The gay community was upset about that and protested and took it as a sign that he was against them, but I never did, not on that. I just thought he had decided to draw the line somewhere and we were over the line. But on other things, I think that he was very supportive, he and his wife, Susan Mudd.
I'd like you to go back a little ways and talk about how you were received as the new head of the IT department, being female and all.
Well, that was fun, too. But there was a network of women already at the city. One of the people on the board that I reported to was Carol Broman, who was the city's chief, what they called the tax commissioner at the time. Later on, to protect the tax commissioner, they changed it to chief assessor or something like that, assessments commissioner. They thought anybody didn't want taxes associated with their title, so. But I feel like getting off on her now. And there was one time that she got a threat over the phone that some guy said, I'm going to come down and kill you. And so she,
because he
was very upset about his tax assessment. And so she thought, well, there's a policeman downstairs in the treasurer's office. I'll go get him. So she went downstairs and said, there's a guy coming down and he says he's going to kill me. And he says, well, I really don't think I'm supposed to leave the treasurer's office. So she went to the mayor's office and I think Art Jones was... working in there at the time, and he said he would come up. And the guy never showed up. Anyway, I still see Carol. I She was something of a mentor to me. And all of the women who were department heads or deputy department heads, whenever a new one came in, they would take them out to lunch. And we would periodically all get together and talk about some of the challenges that we were facing as women who ran departments at the city. And they were a great group. We had receptions, and we would welcome people and sort of show them the back ropes. You could find out what you were supposed to go to and who to take where and what to do.
Okay, but how happy was the ex-head of the department to see you?
Oh, Frank? Oh, Frank had been run the place with an iron fist. He sort of felt that he was totally irreplaceable. And he actually did sit in on the interviews. The board interviewed me. I don't think he thought anybody could fill his shoes, but he forgot to give me a desk. He said that I would be needing him to show me the ropes. So he had worked it out that he stayed for 2 months and showed me around. Well, when I came, there was no... He had forgotten to assign me a desk or an office, and the fellow who was the business manager graciously vacated his office and took one out in the area. And that was Paul Kronberger, who later went on to a systems career and now heads up...
State?
He was at the state for a while, and he heads up a company that supplies resources to the state. So. Yeah, I know you're tired of me talking about Paul, but we're still friends. And that's the thing about Milwaukee. Milwaukee was a small town, kind of. You stayed in touch with people. It wasn't cold and impersonal. Working for city government was close. It felt like family in a lot of ways. And I will say that when I first came to Milwaukee as a lesbian, I had a partner still in Detroit area. And the first thing I did was what you always did if you were traveling on business. You called a gay hotline. And you look it up in the phone book or call information and you say, where can I meet lesbians who are like me? You know, and whatever that might be. In this case, I was looking for kind of professional people who could maybe connect my partner up with a job here or tell us where to go or who were good companies to apply to or work for. And they gave me the name of the Cream City Business Association Women's Group. Karen Gotzler at the time was the first woman to head up the Cream City Business Association, which was a gay organization, men and women, who either ran or were in responsible positions in business. And I met a lot of people through that group. They were great. They were welcoming, and they helped to show me around and took me under their wings. My partner at that time did find her own job, but at least she was given some information on where to send her resume and things like that. So, always it felt like we're the outsiders. So you could always connect with your little outside group in any city you went to.
The underground of connections.
The sort of underground of connections, mm-hmm. Yes. And there were already some thriving organizations here in 86, mm-hmm. Among them Grapevine, which mm-hmm. I know you were
Did you go to
with.
Grapevine?
Not really. They gave me two phone numbers. I called them, and the first one that called me was the Cream City Business Association group, and they were having a meeting that night, and so I got to know them. I actually wasn't that involved in the gay community when I first got here.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have time, though. You worked pretty hard.
Yeah. So not everybody knows that city employees work hard, but... I know that, and you know that. In fact, I have friendly debates all the time with my friend who works for the county about how much the county or the city workers. Later on, I did. Karen Gotzler contacted me again and asked me if I'd help found a group called the Human Rights League, which only lasted a few years, but worked on domestic partnership issues at the city. Mm-hmm. And as I recall, some of the people that...
You were treasurer for that.
Yeah, I was the treasurer of that. Yeah, I was never the charismatic spokesperson. I was always the the nerd in the back room crunching the numbers or writing the minutes or something
cracking
like that.
A little joke here and there.
So, we did. It was quite active for a while, and it was interesting to work on the project for domestic partnership rights at the city. I went the back route on that, and I talked to David Reamer, who I worked for a while. Mm-hmm. After John Norke was formed his cabinet, he consolidated some of our departments into a department of administration. David was the head of that. Mm-hmm. And David was always very supportive for our issues. And he immediately set up an appointment with me for the director of employee relations. And what we talked about, even though the first pass at partner benefits got defeated, mm-hmm. Was getting some rights for bereavement leave and things like that. Some things that were benefits that other people take for granted that weren't available to gay and lesbians who were in relationships.
Right.
So, and David was instrumental in working toward those things. In the background, Marvin Pratt, who was the I don't remember whether he was the
he was the head of the Common Council.
He was either the chair of the, the head of the Common Council at the time or the chair of the Finance and Personnel Committee. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But he, like a lot of people with good intentions, he had a personal conflict. He wasn't sure how he felt about it,
mm-hmm.
but he still felt that somebody's civil rights were at stake in the long run, and I found him to be supportive.
And a pretty straight shooter.
He was honest. He would call you up and say, "What is this?" You know, rather than just kind of making assumptions and steamrolling his way through.
We both liked him in the mayoral election.
Yeah. So,
which he lost, but
and Henningsen, Alderman Henningsen was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Not always the craftiest politician for getting legislation through, but always right out there in front, leading the charge. And
he didn't see any reason why people would fight it.
Yeah. I did not understand.
Right through.
People are going to vote against this. Eventually, they ended up working with the unions because this was a negotiable benefit. And the administration indicated to the unions, I believe, to AFSCME, that they wouldn't be opposed to it if this was something that AFSCME wanted for their members.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I wasn't in those particular discussions, but I think that that's how it came about, that the union asked for it. Mm-hmm. And now the union has, and they have as part of their mission on their website that sexual orientation is one of the protected classes and that they represent diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up being very helpful. I met you at Silver Space at mm-hmm. the Counseling Center.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the board at Lesbian Alliance of Metro Milwaukee.
We suffered through that together.
You joined that, and that's what happens with those organizations. They start out strong and for a cause. I think that LAM started about the time of the Dahmer murders.
It started in 87.
87?
In my backyard.
Yeah, you had the first meeting in your backyard.
But I did not start LAM, as some people say. It was just a place to meet. So yeah,
good cookies or something.
No, everybody brought food. It was supposed to be, of course, the lesbian potluck.
That's our
characteristic. And there was about 110 people, and I was like, oh.
That meant 110 dishes.
Yeah,
70 of them being desserts.
Could you talk a little bit about Silver Space?
Counseling Center had several groups that were meant to provide a safe and supportive environment for people who needed a place to go and talk with others. And one of the groups was Silver Space, one was More Space, and one was Our Space, and all of them,
and one was
all
free
of those,
space.
Free Space, and one was for people who were wondering whether they were gay or not, and one was for married women who were wondering whether they were gay, and Silver Space was for anybody who defined themselves as older lesbians, and it was up to you to say how old you were. Well, my my friend kept saying you ought to come, and there's somebody I want you to meet, and Silver Space, I went, and it was the first time I was there, and they had a format of choosing a topic. Everybody would come up with topics, and then they would decide which ones they were going to talk about, and then they would break down into smaller groups to discuss these topics. That happened once a month. Anyway, that's where I met you. It was great. You had me laughing right from the beginning.
And I loved it because you got it all. You would laugh.
But it was a welcome space, and I'm grateful to the Counseling Center. And they continue to have groups for people. Now I think they're running some groups for lesbians who sort of have gotten away from their core. They moved out of town and they've just moved back. Or they were in a long-time relationship, and some of us tend to get isolated in those relationships. Yeah. And then something happens, and then you realize you really haven't seen your friends for a long time. And so they have a group for people that just sort of have gotten more isolated and would like to talk with others.
And
I was trained as a facilitator, right, and was one of the facilitators of the group. And boy, that's another person, Cheryl Orgas, who is not a lesbian, by the way, has a husband and son. And she has trained generations of group facilitators in these programs. I think she currently is the head of the Voluntary Services for the Blind at the library.
Right here at the library.
At the Central Library.
Right.
So I...
And you have developed other careers since you have retired?
Well, I had a website that failed. But I did. I started a website to sell women's crafts, the festivals. And I realized that it was a little soon. They didn't have PayPal at that time, and it was... costly and difficult finding somebody to process the credit card transactions. And I loved putting up the website. I loved the technical side of it, but the marketing and the finance stuff wore me down, so yeah. I moved on. In retirement, I didn't retire, actually. I quit. I'm going to retire in 2 months. I have a deferred retirement. Yeah, yahoo! I've started to get involved with Red Cross and for the last few years, and have been a disaster volunteer, hurricanes and tornadoes and things.
Right.
No, right. I don't volunteer to start disasters, but I do go in and generally feed people following them. Mm-hmm. So, and that's been a great experience. I feel like I'm not drifting so much. I have to say that it gets wearing year after year doing the intense, more difficult, long-range political things. You going out house to house, canvassing for against the anti-gay marriage amendment, and those kind to change people's minds over the long term is so hard that it felt really it was a relief to go out in some heat and put up with a little bit of discomfort and just hand somebody some food. It's so direct and it's so easy relatively. So I've gone that route, and people give you a lot of credit for it, much more than the people who are behind the scenes working for peace or civil rights behind the scenes year after year after year.
But working during the Katrina Rita hurricane thing and the aftermath of that, where you went 3 weeks down to Louisiana, that was not exactly a bed of velvet.
Well, no, but it was a powerful experience,
mm-hmm.
and humbling, and
seeing the people in Wisconsin here after the tornadoes. That was another. I know you mm-hmm. talked about how moving that was.
The Stoughton tornadoes, here's community again.
Mm-hmm.
There's a small community, everybody pulled together to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
There were Girl Scouts, there were kids groups, there were old people's homes. Everybody was out in the field looking for personal belongings or for things that might cause trouble for farm equipment later. Everybody showed up to rebuild houses, and everybody came together. They were working around the clock to help out in that little community, and it was a joy to work with those people.
Mm-hmm.
I had a feeding route. I drive an ERV, an emergency response vehicle, or I did at that time. Later on, I coordinated them, which is easier. But we got to know the people on the routes and the spirit that they had. I don't know whether it's small town America or just any community, sub-community, anywhere, but when the chips are down, when the crisis is going on,
people just pull together
and they forget their differences and last week's gossip or whatever, and they're all working to help each other out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been inspiring.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I like the Red Cross outfit here, too, in Milwaukee. They're very well organized. And April calls me in the spring and says, I can give you an all-expenses paid vacation and some riverfront property in the east. There's some. But, and you have the right to refuse or accept those assignments. So.
We've had a pretty happy relationship, and a very happy relationship.
Yes, come on! Absolutely.
When I met Holly, she'd had a pretty horrible breakup a year before, and I think she, like me, thought, "Oh, I'll never find anybody else." I know I felt I was too cranky, too opinionated, too crabby, too old. And she was just perfect.
None of that except the opinionated one.
Yeah.
No, I thought that I met somebody you're so outgoing, and I really do, when I relax with somebody I am, but you can talk to anybody, and I tend to be more of a behind-the-scenes person.
Well, you talk to anybody, too. I've never seen you hold back, so I'm sorry.
Anyway, it was great good fortune. I don't
yeah.
think we've ever had a downtime. I don't
Mm-mm.
think we've ever
Mm-mm.
had a week when we were mad at each other. Or
ever.
And it's been great.
Even when we moved. Of course, she gets a little riled when I say, I think I want to buy a house, buy a lot in central Milwaukee and build a straw bale house and put up a, dig a well and put up a windmill and some solar panels. It's like, ooh.
Now, you've had a relationship for 19 years.
No, 13.
13. All right, I'm working on it.
13.
And you have not had a falling out. What do you credit
that? We've had some cranky moments, but I don't. For one thing, when we first got together, we just figured out that the particular things that were hot buttons for me, that have bothered other people about me, just didn't happen to be the things that bothered her.
But and, I thought it was more like we agreed about so many things. We felt compatible. We cared about the same things.
Yeah.
We were both fairly non-religious. We both liked Oriental art. We both liked traveling to certain places. She's taken me more places, and she's a wonderful trip. Oh, she plans trips that are fabulous and not expensive.
And I liked that Julie was direct, and I think that that's a big key. If when you start to feel that something is going wrong, and you would come to me and say, I don't like where this is going, or I didn't like the sound of that, And it doesn't wait and fester for days. It's right there.
It boils.
And then that gives me a chance to say, yeah, I am getting out of line, or no, that's not the way I meant it. But you can really talk about it and deal with it and
but
move
on. I've learned a lot from you about consideration. I always thought I understood people, but you really care about people, and people understand that from you, that you go beyond thinking, oh, this is interesting. You think about how people are really feeling about something, and you're very sensitive to that. And I've tried to learn some of that. If I criticize somebody, you will come back and say, well, maybe this is the case, or maybe that's the case. And I'm thinking, oh, dear, you could be so right. So
I remember you telling your daughter, I think it was, that one of the things you liked about us is that we still admire each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important, too. I do.
I do admire you and a lot. I respect you a great deal. I think that's very important. It's not just your pretty blue eyes. No, she doesn't have blue eyes.
Oh, they're green.
Oh, dear. But, yeah, we've been very lucky.
And your relationship with her children?
It isn't as a stepmother. They were already grown before I came along. And I like them a lot, both of them. And their kids call me Grandma Holly, but it's not quite the same. And I think it would have been if I had come along sooner, but as raising, you know, I didn't have any part in raising them.
I have an older brother who didn't like it that I was gay, and he decided to let bygones be bygones and invited us all out to come and see him in California, and he loved Holly. He just thought she was terrific, so, and he was right for a change.
I don't know how to explain it, but your grandson, Sebastian, we've talked about this a lot. Steve was Julie's son-in-law, and he was the perfect, if you wanted to pick the ideal son-in-law, it would have been Steve. And Steve died at 29 of a heart attack while Anne was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And she had had some complications in her pregnancy. And so everybody was pulling for this little guy. Everybody was pulling for this little guy to be born, the only child. And I can't imagine any family, any child feeling that I would have felt more connected to before he was even born, because we wanted so much for him to live.
Mm-hmm.
And both for his father and for his mother and for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he is. He's a great kid. So although he's not my grandson, that touched me a lot, pulling for him. And he's a happy kid and a smart kid and a bright kid. And I'm real pleased when he calls me Grandma Holly.
He's a well-loved child. He gets a lot of attention. That's great.
And
you
we miss
have
Steve.
Always been, yeah, we really miss Steve. You've always been really great with my family, and they all love you. It's just easy. There's nothing to find about you that's a problem. So,
and my family likes you, and they like the way you treat me.
Wow.
They do find fault with some of your politics sometimes, I think. Because you're a little more forceful about them than I am.
Yeah, but we just had Holly's sister and her husband visiting us, and the way to their goodwill is to cook a decent meal. And then Ron was telling me how much he disliked George Bush, and I was like, well, hey.
This guy's from Texas. He was a Bush supporter. But I think that they're trying, you know, and I think they're trying to reach common ground. Kay and I weren't real real close as kids. As we get older, you learn to love and you learn to realize that some things just aren't that important. And even though our politics were different and in a lot of ways we just really had totally different lives, you just connect more and realize that some of those things are pretty superficial.
But her family's always been very, very gay positive.
Yeah, they've been great to me.
Except for your one niece, who is a mystery to everybody anyway. She seems to be a bit deranged in some ways, but...
we want to edit that part out.
Oh, well, too much straight talk. Yeah, well. But you've taught me a lot about how there are more than one way to look at a lot of people, and I just appreciate it a lot.
Well, I used to tell people that you being the more direct person, that if we lived in the 30s in Germany, I probably would have been one who kept saying, well, if we just give on this one more thing and go along with this, it'll be better and we'll all work together. You would have been... dead. because we need the ones who are willing to fight and who are willing to stick their necks out. And our movement and our community needs that, and our country needs that. I think that the anti-war protesters are as much war heroes as the others, the hawks that wave the flags. And I learned from you that you need to stand up and fight. We need that.
Well, it just makes me mad. I have to. But I do think Milwaukee's a very good community in that regard. We have some terrific groups here, peace groups. You know, some of the church groups have been very outstanding, and I say that as a person who does not ever attend church, would not. And... So I think there's some very good groups here.
I think we can ramp it up. I think this is a great place. I'm glad I chose to come here to Milwaukee, and my path has been laid out, and this ended up being just the right place for me. And I'm glad you came to Milwaukee.
I'm glad you're here.
And we expect to spend our years here.
Right.